This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch from the Money Advice Trust. Now, most people listening will be familiar with what is probably the most quoted FCA statistic ever, that around half of all UK adults have characteristics of vulnerability. First reported in the 2017 Financial Lives Survey, fondly known as the FLS, but found again in the 2020 and 2022 surveys, this statistic can still cause jaws to drop and mouths to hang wide open today. So with the FLS approaching its 10th anniversary, we invited Sarah Montgomery, the FCA's Head of Department for Cross-Cutting Response, Research and Contracts, to come and talk about the FLS and whether after a decade, firms are really getting the most out of it or still getting caught in the glare of its headline statistics, what Sarah's hidden gems of the FLS on vulnerability are, and how firms can find their own in the data set, and to officially settle the matter once and for all, just what does the statistic, half of all UK adults have characteristics of vulnerability, practically mean for a firm?
Are you looking to strengthen your approach to vulnerability and consumer duty? Join the award-winning Vulnerability Academy, delivered by the Money Advice Trust in partnership with UK Finance. Over 200 professionals have already graduated, and Cohort 15 starts on 14th of April. Don't miss out. Sign up now at moneyadvicetrust.org/academy or click the link in the description.
Sarah, welcome to the podcast. To set the scene, can we start by exploring what the Financial Life Survey is, when it all began, how often it runs, and probably most importantly, just why it was created in the first place?
Yes, well, thanks ever so much for having me, Chris. It's a real pleasure to talk about the Financial Life Survey, or FLS, as we often call it. It's a large-scale, nationally representative survey of UK adults' financial behaviour, and it looks at their perceptions of and experiences with financial services. It covers so many things. It looks at the products that people use, how they interact and engage with firms, how confident they feel about dealing with their money, what their attitudes are. But we also, for context, create and collect quite a lot of background information. So we get information on demographics, on people's income, on their savings and borrowing. So it's a real wealth of information and data. We launched it almost 10 years ago. 2017 was the first Financial Lives, and it was really there to try and move beyond market data and understand consumers' real circumstances and their behavior, and to give us a really full picture across all the products and services people might hold to understand their needs and their lives a bit more accurately. And obviously, as a regulator, we have our consumer protection objective. So this information is really important and really useful to us, and we use it a lot. And then the last thing I'd just say, it runs every 2 years. So we spend a year collecting the data, a year working with it. We publish it the following year. And sometimes we do smaller recontact surveys in between for a bit of annual insight. We did one not so long ago on cost of living. So that's how we run it at the moment.
It's great. And great to know it's the 10th anniversary coming up. I'll get my street party organised. The invite will be in the post for you. So since it's launched, it has changed. It has evolved, hasn't it? In terms of its scope, how vulnerability is explored, how the findings are used. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so there's probably four areas where it's kind of evolved since it started. Obviously, it's a lot bigger. So our sample size when we started was about 13,000 people. We're up to nearly 20,000 now. And I think the benefit of that is we can look a lot more closely at particular groups. So we can look at people with characteristics of vulnerability. We can look at different age groups or different products. And I think just as importantly, we can then look at kind of how they combine, perhaps. So older people with characteristics of vulnerability and how they behave. The scope's expanded too. So we now cover a much wider range of topics. We do deep dives into particular products, but we also do some broader themes. So we do some on financial inclusion, consumers' experience with financial services, and support for borrowers in financial difficulty. for example. You just mentioned vulnerability, and actually that's another area where we have kind of broadened and expanded the information that we gather. So we used to focus on a smaller set of characteristics around physical and mental health and low financial resilience. Now we look at things like progressive health conditions, cancer, multiple sclerosis, for example, learning difficulties, low emotional resilience. And then the fourth area we have expanded is how we use the data. So colleagues work really closely with my market research team to build the evidence base for a lot of our work, our policy work. And I'm sure you'll have seen our strategy that we published last year. There was a theme around helping consumers navigate their financial lives, and the financial life survey was used to underpin some of those core metrics. So we will be using financial lives to track our progress against the strategy. So a real kind of living evidence base for us, I'd say.
Absolutely. I read the survey, such as the degree of preparation for this this interview. I read the survey before. And the thing that struck me is the wealth of information in there. But many of us often think about Financial Lives, FLS, as a single report. But in reality, it's a whole array of really useful resources. So can you give us a bird's eye view of actually, when we talk about FLS, what is actually in there in terms of resources that are available to firms?
Well, you're right. There is a wealth of information. And this is probably one of the main messages I want to get across to folk because, yeah, people know about the main publication, and that's often where they will start. It's meant to be easy to dip into and get a kind of general sense of what is going on. But we do then have 18 thematic reports, and they're in like slide decks. So again, they are pretty accessible, but they give you a bit more detail. They allow you to go under those headlines a little bit more. And we have reports on vulnerability and resilience, financial inclusion, forbearance and debt advice. So there's, as I say, there's 18 of those that folk can look at. The other thing we do give access to are full data tables. So that covers every survey question. It gives breakdowns by age, income, product use and characteristics of vulnerability. And, you know, they are a really good source of information that can help people understand their consumers a bit better. All of those three publications are on our website. There's an FLS landing page, and you can find those resources there. But that's not it. We also have the raw data. That sits with the Geographic Data Service, and firms can apply for that access. But my team has provided guidance on how to use that. And that really does allow firms to go into really specific detail about, you know, people that are within the markets that they operate and, you know, what those characteristics of those consumers actually are. So there is a lot in there, and I would love it, you know, really encourage people to kind of look at the main report, but really dive into the wealth of detail that sits behind it. It's really valuable.
Here's my two top tips for getting the most out of it. Maybe you've got one you want to add on to this, Sarah. My first one is read the survey questionnaire. Now, you might be thinking that's really boring. You can always keyword search it for things. I was amazed, for example, by how much is in there about disability.
Yeah.
And you can compare that to wider data sets, government data sets, which is really good. The other thing I've done is I've popped it into Google Notebook. Other AI products are available. And then I don't have to read it. I can just get it. I could search it, keyword search it. It'll give me the tables back. It'll give me the data. So they're my two top tips for lazy boys and lazy girls out there who want to get the most. Do you have one to add on to that, Sarah?
No, but I do like the AI one. And I think actually we're really interested in understanding how people do use it. And there, I'm sure more innovative uses that firms will have and other people will have. To kind of get the most out of FLS. Hopefully we're going to provide an email address, but if people do want to let us know, we would be delighted to hear how folk are using it.
Yeah, do be careful of the AI tool you use, because FLS does get confused with JLS. And of course, we don't want tables and JLS. Now, most firms in financial services will know the FLS statistic. It's the famous one, isn't it? Around half of UK adults have characteristics of vulnerability. But I want us to kind of go beyond that statistic. Let's drill down a little bit about how the FLS can help firms better think about some of the key pillars and the FCA's work around vulnerability, particularly the vulnerability guidance, FG21/1, that This guidance has got a number of key pillars. Don't worry, we're not going to ask you to do all of them, but let's just focus on a handful of the most important ones. And you can give us a sense of where the FLS can really, really help us. So the pillar about understanding customers' needs is a really basic one, not just for the vulnerability guidance, but I think generally for the consumer duty as well.
Yeah.
But there's a great emphasis in the vulnerability guidance on things like nature, scale, and impact of vulnerability in a customer base. So how can the FLS help us with this?
So I think FLS does a few things really, really well. And what it can do is bring together some of the things that are really important to understand under the vulnerability guidance and the consumer duty. So understanding kind of who a firm's customers are, what characteristics of vulnerability they might have, and what kind of harms they might face or disadvantages they might experience. And of course, firms have their own data, but it might be kind of more limited and doesn't give them the kind of the broader context or perhaps the prevalence of those characteristics of vulnerability that particular groups may have. So, you know, we can demonstrate through the Financial Life survey that, for instance, you know, through the product data that we collect alongside the vulnerability data that we have, we know that a quarter of people that are overdraft users have low financial resilience. Or that people who have prepaid funeral plans, quite a few of them are going to be in poor health. And so that can then kind of help firms understand more about the market within which they're operating and who are buying these particular products. And I think the other thing that FLS can do is it links those characteristics of vulnerability to outcomes and difficulties. So if you think about consumers who have poor health, a lot of them have difficulty managing their finances or kind of interacting with financial firms. They struggle to follow instructions, perhaps, or they find phone-based conversations difficult. Some may avoid engagement altogether. And so as a firm, if you understand those things, you can try and design your products and services with that in mind and with improving those outcomes and improving that engagement.
One of the other pillars, and this is a really nice kind of focus to have, and I think the Financial Life can really help us here, is around product and service design. Yeah. The FCA have been really, really clear. You don't just think about vulnerability as a response. You preempt foreseeable harm. So you think about it at the design stage. So how can firms use, again, the FLS to sense check or better ensure maybe that a product or a journey or a service model might work well for someone with characteristics of vulnerability?
So I think this is where Financial Life can be particularly powerful at that design stage. So I think it can help firms test whether what they are building is likely to work for consumers with characteristics of vulnerability. And it's so important to think about that up front and for it not to be an afterthought, or to kind of have to course correct or adjust later on because you haven't quite got it right. And I think Financial Life shows firms the needs and the capabilities and the risks of those different consumer groups and can identify which consumers are more likely to have maybe low financial capability or resilience, which products they hold. So, you know, if you're designing something that has complex pricing or an app-only service or other features that might be a bit challenging, firms can sense check whether the people they are targeting with that product are going to be able to cope with those features or not and make those adjustments early on in the design process.
Yeah, some really, really rich data in there. And equally, some rich data around the final pillar we're going to touch on. We're not covering all the pillars in the vulnerability guidance, but communications, absolutely key one as well. And that big crossover with the consumer duty. So again, how can the FLS help us really sharpen up those communications? People have run them through the, the Flesch Kincaid reading score? Do you know that was invented by the US military? Always suspicious when things have been invented by the US military. It's kind of but go beyond kind of a reading ages.
Yeah.
How can the FLS help us when we're thinking about comms and vulnerability?
Yeah, and you're right. It's important both in the kind of the pillar of the vulnerability guidance, but also the consumer understanding element of the consumer duty. And I think financial lives can be quite revealing when it comes to communication because, you know, it doesn't just show us who those people are, but how they are actually experiencing and interacting with financial services. So we can see that people with low financial capability are much more likely to struggle when they're dealing with financial matters or interacting with their service providers. Half of them feel quite stressed or overwhelmed. 40% feel nervous talking to their providers, and a similar number find phone-based conversations quite confusing. And so it really does highlight where comms can become a source of foreseeable harm and can help firm identify which groups are maybe less likely to understand the standard communications. Like we all kind of get the emails from our kind of financial services firms or the letters through the post, which are the standard comms, but you know, they can really reflect on whether that needs tailoring for particular groups. And it's likely then to be more accessible to a broader audience.
And again, we can drill down if we want the higher level, it's there. If we want to drill down into more of the detail, it's there as well. But let's take a deeper empirical turn in our discussions. We all know the big statistic from the FLS when it comes to vulnerability, and we'll come to that in just a moment. But a bit like Desert Island Disc, Sarah, I was wondering if you could share three of your favourite hidden gems from the FLS on vulnerability. It could be financial, it could be non-financial.
So you've limited me to three. I will stick to three. And my first one is probably around how different characteristics of vulnerability interact. There's a really great kind of Venn diagram that is in the vulnerability slide deck that kind of shows these overlapping characteristics. So, you know, it has the four drivers, capability, health, resilience, and, you know, the negative life events. And it just, it looks a bit like a flower, but it kind of shows how they overlap and how we know that harm increases as those characteristics accumulate. And you can see that really quite clearly. And we know that people with multiple characteristics of vulnerability are far more likely to struggle with paying bills, making financial decisions, or understanding information. And that mirrors what we kind of saw in the vulnerability review. I think my second hidden gem is more around scale and impact of low financial capability. In the most recent FLS, we know that 6.5 million adults had low financial capability. And these are consumers that aren't just less confident. They behave quite differently. They shop around less. They delay kind of decisions. They feel more anxious about money. And if you as a firm are designing your products and your processes for those confident consumers, you might quietly be excluding quite a large group of adults within the population. I think my third hidden gem is probably around how vulnerability can be spread across different products. Now, we collect ownership data for, you know, more than 100 products, and we can see that some markets have much higher concentrations of people with low resilience or poor health. So we know that half of high cost credit users have low financial resilience. One in four lifetime ISA holders report having a mental health condition. And I think that kind of information, if you're operating in that market, that can suggest to firms that you might want to pay a bit more attention to the design and the communication and the support that might be provided around those products. And I think that can be particularly valuable to add to your own data that you hold.
Glad you mentioned the flower. I always refer to that as the Stratford Lotus. It looks like a lotus flower in honor of the headquarters. Or Woolard's Rose, but Chris Woolard's moved on, hasn't he?
So he has.
It's the Stratford Lotus. We'll stick with that. We, as we said before, we can't talk about the Financial Life Survey and vulnerability without referring to the most well-known statistic. If people know one thing about vulnerability in the FCA, is that it's the finding from the FLS that around, more or less, over the course of different surveys, around half of UK adults have characteristics of vulnerability. Now, I've noticed that some firms seem to read that as shorthand for 50% of all UK adults are vulnerable and experiencing harm. So to put it on the record, can you explain what this half of all UK adults figure actually means and what firms should do with it?
Yeah, no, thank you. Because it is often misunderstood. And When we say that around half of UK adults have characteristics of vulnerability, we don't mean that half the population is necessarily experiencing harm, or even that they might have additional needs right now. It means that they have one characteristic that could make them more susceptible depending on those circumstances. And of course, we know that vulnerability sits on a spectrum and needs vary very widely. Some individuals with a characteristic of vulnerability have no additional needs at all. They can crack on with managing their financial lives, but others with multiple characteristics can be at higher risk and have complex needs. And firms really do need to be aware of that. And I guess we know that people can move in and out of vulnerability over time. So, you know, you may experience a bereavement, you know, within your family or a job loss that can make some people, not everybody, but some people can feel particularly vulnerable at that time. And so I think there is something for firms to think about around creating the condition for consumers to tell firms about what support and help that they do need. And we found that when people do that, the majority say that their providers make changes that help them get the support that they do need. So I think, you know, that's probably one of the messages I would take or give to folk from that headline statistic.
Lovely. We've had it officially. That's very, very helpful. A couple of final questions for you, Sarah. One of the distinctive features of the FLS, as you said right at the start, is that it's been running for a long time, decade, I think, coming up, and it continues to evolve. But we can often think about surveys as cross-sectional and snapshots, but yeah, there is a value here of the FLS as a long-term data set, particularly when it comes to understanding vulnerability in the UK population. Well, how can we get the best out of it as a long-term data set? And do you have any plans to kind of exploit this a little bit more?
Yeah, no, and that's really, I agree. It's so helpful that it is not just that kind of snapshot. And it, as I said, we do it every other year. When we're not publishing, we're working towards the publication of the next one, because it shows how vulnerability and consumer experience changes over time. And, you know, as we've just been discussing, vulnerability is dynamic. Kind of health, income, circumstances can shift, and we can track whether things are getting better or worse for particular groups. And if, you know, if behavior needs to change or our policy needs to change, we can kind of take those steps to do it. And I think, you know, one of the things I haven't said is that, you know, having this data, putting it out there in the way that we do, it can be particularly helpful for smaller firms who might not have access to those larger kind of data sets of their own. They don't have the people necessarily, and it can provide them with insights as to kind of what their customer base is looking like and how their consumers need support. We are evolving the data set and we're seeking to improve access. One of the things we are doing particularly at the moment is around digital exclusion. And while, you know, you can look back from 2017 to now, it's really kind of great strides have been made in this space. It's kind of one of the positive stories where, you know, there are 7 million who were digitally excluded when we first started this, down to kind of just over 1 million now, predominantly older folk, those with lower income. But we are working with the charity, the Good Things Foundation and the Connection Project to think about how we can use FLS data to help them and ourselves better understand consumers and help them fully participate in an increasingly digital society, which I think is really important.
Absolutely. Right. One thing. This is the thing that people remember in 3 months' time. One thing from this episode about the FLS and consumer vulnerability. What's that message you want to leave listeners with?
So I think it's about helping firms really understand real consumers, not just statistics. So getting underneath, understanding who their consumers really are, the challenges they face, where harm may show up, and how they can improve their product design, how they can improve the quality of their communications and their consumer support. So I think the big thing, we've kind of mentioned it throughout this conversation, Chris, is go beyond the headlines. Look at some of the data underneath, have a dig around at it and see what that actually tells you about the consumers that you interact with on a daily basis. And, you know, as I said, go to our website and have a play around with that information and see what it can do for you.
Sarah, thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
That was Sarah Montgomery helping us to look past the glare of the headlines and down to the empirical gems below. And I hope that has also officially settled once and for all those arguments at your boardroom or your kitchen table about what the 50% figure actually means. So if you want to find your own hidden gems, and they are in there, you can find all of the FLS results and data at fca.org.uk/financial-lives. Plus, if you're already using the survey to shape your work, the FLS team would love to hear from you. And here's their email address. Keep it to yourselves. It's financial-lives-survey@fca.org.uk. And that's about it. So until next time, keep it lively, keep it financial, and keep on remembering that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was brought to you by the Money Advice Trust. It was presented by Chris Fitch and produced by Phil King.